Okay, I think what I'll do in this last lecture on communism in your midst, apart from one this afternoon on economics, right? But to a different group of people. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll forget about Christianity. Isn't that terrible? Forget about Christianity. And just talk to you as if I'm a communist and address the various subjects that communism does address that we've not yet addressed in this class. So, first let me say something about the communist view of the family. Engels says, as men emerged from the animal world, there prevailed a certain equality in the conditions of existence, and for the heads of families, a kind of equality of social production. The study of the history of primitive society reveals to us conditions in which men lived in polygamy and their wives simultaneously in polyandry, and the common children are therefore regarded as being common to them all. Marx says, the capitalist system, by assigning an important part in the process of production outside the domestic sphere, to women, to young persons, and to children of both sexes, creates a new economic basis for a higher form of the family and of the relations between the sexes. It is, of course, just as absurd to regard the Christian form of the family as absolute and final as it would be to apply that character to the ancient Roman, the ancient Greek, and the Eastern forms of the family. Lenin says, a new form of family, new conditions in the status of women and in the upbringing of the younger generation are being prepared, the breakup of the patriarchal family. And I must interject here that socialists in America have largely achieved this in the United States. In my opinion, it honestly is appalling to visit the United States and to see the degree of disintegration of the family in this country, even in evangelical circles. It really is. Did I tell you yet that living in pagan Australia, which is a white heathen country, families are living together much more solidly than are evangelical families in the United States? That is a fact. I wish it weren't, but it's the truth. Okay. Lenin says, again, Soviet authority, international, impels the Soviet republics to amalgamation into one socialist family. And Marx said, once the earthly family is discovered to be the secret of the Holy Family, by which he means God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit, the former, that is the earthly family, must then itself be destroyed in theory and in practice. Next, what does communism believe about education? Marx says, from the factory system there budded, as the germ of the education of the future, an education that will, in the case of every child over a given age, combine productive labor with instruction and gymnastics, not only as one of the methods of adding to the efficiency of production, but as the only method of producing fully developed human beings. Engels says, the young folk, as they pass through the schools, will be taught the whole system of production as part of their education. And Lenin adds, by educating the Workers' Party, Marxism educates the vanguard of the proletariat, which is capable of assuming power and of leading the whole people to socialism, of directing and organizing the new order, of being the teacher, the guide, the leader of all the toilers. We must strive to secure the mixing of children of all nationalities in uniform schools in each locality. So if you want to know where the modern American system of busing came from, it comes from the philosophy of Vladimir Lenin. Marxists have a general school plan which demands, for example, an absolutely secular school. As far as Marxists are concerned, no departure from this general program is anywhere or at any time permissible. We are seriously carrying out the transference of the educational function of the separate household to society. The children are brought up under more favorable conditions than at home. Scary to look at what's happening in America today after you've considered what I just read you. Okay, what did communists believe about morality? Marx says, change the very stuff of human nature. Substitute a communal and moral existence for the purely independent life with which we are all of us endowed by nature. Engels adds, we therefore reject every attempt to impose upon us any moral dogma whatsoever. As an external, ultimate, and forever immutable moral law, on the pretext that the moral world, too, has its permanent principles which transcend history and the differences between nations. In a society in which the motive for stealing will have been done away with, in which only lunatics would ever steal, how the teacher of morals would be laughed at who tried solemnly to proclaim the eternal truth, thou shalt not steal. So, in communist society in the future, only a lunatic would dream of stealing, they believe. Lenin adds, we do not believe in an eternal morality, and we expose the deceit of all the fables about morality. Morality serves the purpose of helping human society to rise to a higher level and to get rid of the exploitation of labor. Is there then such a thing as communist morality? Of course there is. We say that our morality is entirely subordinate to the interests of the class struggle of the proletariat. The necessity of observing the simple, fundamental rules of human intercourse will very soon become a habit. In time, morals will be improved, perhaps by force of habit, so that even individual excesses will inevitably begin to wither away. In other words, under communism, people will be absolutely perfect and will never dream of doing anything in the least bit wrong. What does communism teach on law and order? Marx says society does not rest upon the law. Law must rest upon society. Engels adds, at a certain very primitive stage of the development of society, the need arises to coordinate under a common regulation the daily recurring acts of production, distribution, and exchange of products, to see to it that the individual subordinates himself to the common conditions of production and exchange. This regulation, which is at first custom, soon becomes law. Justice is never anything but the ideologized, glorified expression of the existing economic factors. And Lenin adds, sweeping away the law courts of the old order, proletarian democracy issues the class watchword, election of judges from among the workers and by the workers alone. The scientific concept, dictatorship, means nothing more or less than power which rests directly on violence, which is not limited by any laws or restricted by any absolute rules. In other words, in the first phase of a communist takeover of a country, under the dictatorship of the proletariat, there is no law. There is just the naked force of the state against all of its enemies. The court must not eliminate terror. To promise this would be self-deception or fraud. It must explain and legalize terror in principle, without falsity and without embellishment. The perfect state of society in which all laws, discipline, and government will become unnecessary, where people will gradually become accustomed to observing the elementary rules of social intercourse without force and without compulsion, is, of course, still way down the track in the future, even for Russia and China. What does communism believe about the state? Well, Karl Marx says, the so-called Christian state needs the Christian religion to complete itself as a state. The democratic state, notice how Marx correctly contrasts the Christian state to the democratic state. West today is diseased with democracy. We think democracy is a good thing. It isn't, unless everybody or the majority of the people are Christian. We don't want democracy, we want Christianity. And of course, if and when most of the people embrace Christianity, then we'll have a democratic form of Christianity. But it's much better to have an autocratic form of Christianity than it is to have a democratic form of socialism or atheism. Okay. Marx says the so-called Christian state needs the Christian religion to complete itself as a state. How true. The democratic state does not need religion to be politically complete. To the contrary, the democratic state can ignore religion because it is the realization in a worldly way of the human basis of religion. Engels adds, the state then has not existed from all eternity. The state will inevitably fall. The society that will organize production on the basis of a free and equal association of the producers will put the whole machinery of the state where it will then belong, into the Museum of Antiquity by the side of the spinning wheel and the bronze axe. The government of persons is replaced. The state is not to be abolished. It withers away. And Lenin states, the state is a machine for the oppression of one class by another, for holding the other class and other subordinated classes obedient. The proletarian and peasant Soviet Republic has proved to be the first stable socialist republic in the world. As a new type of state, it cannot die. No power on earth can halt the progress of the world communist revolution toward the world Soviet Republic. They believe then that the time will come when the United States of America will become the socialist states of America and will then apply for admission into the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. That's the expectation. Of course, they've got problems there right now, but that's another story. We're talking in this class communist theory and not present Russian or Eastern European history. Big difference between the two. The state will continue to exist until victorious socialism develops into full communism. Democracy is a form of state and will also wither away when the state withers away. So according to communism, even democracy will wither away. Indeed, according to communism, even the Communist Party will wither away. And according to communism, even humanity will wither away one day. I hope to reach that in this lecture. What does communism believe about nationality? Marx and Engels say, the communists are reproached with desiring to abolish countries and nationality. The working men have no country. National differences and antagonisms between people are daily more and more vanishing. The supremacy of the proletariat will cause them to vanish still faster. Marx adds, even the natural differences within the species, like racial differences, must be done away with historically. And Lenin says, international culture, now already being systematically created by the proletariat in all countries, does not absorb national culture, no matter of what national group as a whole, but accepts from each national culture exclusively those of its elements that are consistently democratic and socialist, and ditches everything else in each culture which is not democratic socialist. The time is not far off when the working people of all countries will unite into one single worldwide state. We are internationalists. We stand for the close union and the complete amalgamation of the workers and the peasants of all nations into one single world Soviet Republic. We must, therefore, strive persistently for the unity of nations, and we must ruthlessly suppress everything that tends to divide them. Socialism is promoting and greatly accelerating the drawing together and the fusion of the nations. And Stalin added, after Lenin, we are in favor of amalgamating the future of national cultures into one common culture having one common language. And that language will not be English. And it won't be Spanish. And it won't be Russian. And it won't be Chinese. It will be a mixture only of the socialistic words in each of those major languages, and also the other more minor languages. Okay, communism on art. Karl Marx says, animals construct only in accordance with the standards and the needs of the species to which they belong. Man knows how to apply the appropriate standard to the object. Thus, man constructs also in accordance with the laws of beauty. A spider conducts operations that resemble those of a weaver, and a bee puts to shame many an architect in the construction of her cells. But what distinguishes the worst architect from the best bee is this, that the architect raises his structure in his imagination before he erects it in reality. Marx and Engels together say, in communist society, there will be no painters. There will only be people who, amongst many other things, also paint. So all professions disappear in a perfect communist society of the future. Engels says, the eagle sees much farther than man, but the human eye sees considerably more in things than does the eye of the eagle. The dog has a far keener sense of smell than man, but it does not distinguish 1/100th part of the odors that for man are definite signs denoting different things. The sense of touch, which the ape hardly possesses in its crudest initial form, has been developed only side by side with the development of the human hand itself through the medium of labor. The human hand attains a high degree of perfection that has enabled it to conjure into being the pictures of Raphael, the statues of Thorwaldsen, and the music of Paganini. And Lenin adds, what does the principle of party literature mean? It must not become an individual matter, independent of the common proletarian goal, down with the non-party literati. The communist doctrine of science is very important. Marx says, it is a paradox that the earth moves round the sun. that water consists of two highly inflammable gases. Scientific truth is always paradox if judged by everyday experience. The economic condition of production can be accurately substantiated in the matter of the natural sciences. Sense experience must be the basis of all science. The whole of history is a preparation for man to become an object of sense perception and for the development of human needs. History itself is a real part of natural history, of the development of nature into man. Natural science will one day incorporate the science of man, just as the science of man will one day incorporate natural science. There will then be one single science. Engels says, only in the working class does the theoretical mind persist unstunted. The more regardlessly and disinterestedly science proceeds, the more it finds itself in unison with the workers' interests and strivings. After the mighty advances of natural science in the present century, we are placed in a position where we will get to know and hence to control even the more remote natural consequences of our most ordinary productive activities. And Lenin adds, all scientific abstractions present a deeper, more faithful, more complete reflection of nature. What do communists believe about religion? Marx says, shame on you, you Christians, that an antichrist such as Marx has to show you the essence of Christianity. That's a nice statement, don't you think? Here's another one. Religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature, the heart of a heartless world, just as it is the spirit of a spiritless situation. Religion is the opium of the people. Engels adds, religion is essentially the emptying of man and of nature of all content, and the transferring of this content to the phantom of a distant God. Marx and Engels together state communism abolishes all religion. Lenin adds, religion is opium for the people. Religion is a sort of spiritual booze. Get high on Jesus. That's my interjection. In which the slaves of capital drown their human image, their demand for a life that is worthy of man. Among the tasks of our cultural revolution, special place is occupied by the struggle against the opiate of the people. Religion, a struggle which must be carried on systematically and relentlessly. The proletarian power must destroy all government support of the church. For the church is an agent of the governing classes. We must destroy all participation by the church in the government-organized work of upbringing and education. In other words, outlaw church schools. And we must mercilessly suppress the counter-revolutionary activity of church organizations. In other words, we must make it a crime for the church to help poor people. Only the Communist Party may be allowed to do that. And of course, it will only help poor communists and starve to death all poor people that are not communists or who cannot be turned into communists. Lenin says, our propaganda includes the propaganda of atheism. Necessarily, we must fight religion. That is the ABC of Marxism. It stands atheistic and hostile to every religion. Those of you who are talking while I'm talking, have a good talk now, because let me tell you, if and when the communists take over, you won't be talking no more. If you really want to talk, I suggest you go outside right now And in that way, you'll make it possible for those that do want to learn something. Okay. Communism on the truth. According to Engels, that which is recognized now as true has also its latent false side, which will later manifest itself. Lenin says, we must be prepared to make all possible sacrifices and even, if necessary, all possible subterfuges, sleight of hand, illegal methods, taking refuge in silence and keeping the truth secret in order to be able to penetrate the trade unions, to stay in and then to conduct communist activities there, that is, inside the labor unions, at any price. Absolute truth results from the sum total of relative truths in the course of their development. In each scientific truth, irrespective of its relativity, there is an element of absolute truth. Human thought is capable of giving and does give absolute truth, which is compounded from a sum total of relative truths. True philosophy, namely materialism, includes partisanship within itself, as it were, as it demands, in every evaluation of an occurrence, direct and open adoption of the standpoint of a specific social group. To be able to resist the fight and to wage it to the end with complete success, the natural scientist must be a modern materialist, a conscious adherent of the materialism represented by Marx. And Mao Tse-tung adds, the Communist Party is not afraid of criticism because we are Marxists, because truth is on our side. Facts are all things objectively existent. Truth means their interdependence, and searching means study. Unquote, Mao Tse-tung. What did communists believe about revolution? Well, Marx and Engels say this. The alteration of men on a mass scale is necessary. An alteration which can only take place in a practical movement. A revolution. This revolution is necessary, therefore, not only because the ruling class overthrowing it can only in a revolution succeed in ridding itself of all the muck of the ages and become fitted to found society anew. In all revolutions up to now, the mode of activity always remained unscathed, and it was only a question of a different distribution of this activity, a new distribution of labor. Whilst the communist revolution is directed against the preceding mode of activity, does away with labor, and abolishes the rule of classes within the classes themselves. The communists everywhere support every revolutionary movement against the existing social and political order of things. They labor everywhere for the union and agreement of the democratic parties of all countries. Engels adds, a revolution is certainly the most authoritarian thing there is. It is the act by which one part of the population imposes its will upon the other part by means of rifles, bayonets, and cannon. Authoritarian means, if such there be at all. The communist revolution will not be national only, but will take place simultaneously in all civilized countries. How wrong they are on that one. It is humanity's leap from the realm of necessity into the realm of freedom. What does communism believe about war? Marx and Engels say this. The communists openly declare that their ends can be attained only by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. Lenin says the victory of socialism is possible first in several or even in one capitalist country alone. After expropriating the capitalists and organizing their own socialist production, the victorious proletariat of that country will rise against the rest of the world, the capitalist world. The victory of socialism in one country does not at one stroke eliminate all war in general. On the contrary, it presupposes further wars. Only after we have overthrown, finally vanquished, and expropriated the bourgeoisie of the whole world, and not merely of one country alone, wars become impossible. And Mao Tse-tung adds, there is only one way of eliminating war, namely to oppose war by means of revolutionary war, to oppose national counter-revolutionary war by means of revolutionary class war. We will put an end to man's warring era with our hands. And the war we are waging is undoubtedly part of the final war. But the war that we are confronted with is also undoubtedly part of the greatest and most ruthless of all wars. Politics grows out of the barrel of a gun. We are protagonists of the all-powerful or revolutionary war, which is good and Marxistic. And what do communists believe about peace? Very interesting. Engels says, we the revolutionaries, the rebels, we are thriving far better on legal methods than on illegal methods. Lenin says, every peace program is a deception of the people and a piece of hypocrisy unless its principal object is to explain to the masses the need for a revolution and to support, aid, and develop the revolutionary struggle of the masses that is starting everywhere, ferment amongst the masses, protests, fraternization in the trenches, strikes, and demonstrations. Khrushchev said, you must understand that we live in an epoch when one system, the American, is giving way to another, the communist. When you established your republican system in the 18th century, the English did not like it. Well now, today a process is taking place in which the people want to live under a new system of society. And it is necessary that one should agree and reconcile himself with this fact. This process should take place without interference. In the 1961 New Party Program of the Soviet Union, the following is stated. It is possible to avert a world war by the combined efforts of the mighty socialist camp, the peace-loving non-socialist countries, the international working class, and all the forces championing peace. The growing superiority of the socialist forces over the forces of imperialism, the forces of peace over those of war, will make it actually possible to banish world war from the life of society even before the complete victory of socialism on earth. So they were saying there probably will be no World War III simply because Russia and her allies get stronger and stronger, the United States gets weaker. The United States will surrender and will not take on the Soviet Union in an all-out physical confrontation, is what they were saying here. Mao Tse-tung adds, to organize a revolution means to be engaged with the creation of the definite abolition of all wars. What do communists believe about freedom? In communist society, say Marx and Engels, that is future communist society, society will regulate the general production and thus will make it possible for me to do one thing today and another thing tomorrow, to go hunting in the morning, to go fishing in the afternoon, to rear cattle in the evening, and to criticize art after dinner. Marx says, communism is the definitive resolution of the antagonism between man and nature, and between man and man. Communism is the true solution of the conflict between objectification and self-affirmation, between freedom and necessity. And the next quote from Engels came into my mind just as my plane from Australia was getting ready to land at LA Airport. And I looked down and saw this horrible mass of brown cloud. And I thought, my goodness, do 11 million people live and breathe under that? Now, this is what Engels wrote 100 years ago, before there was a Los Angeles. The present poisoning of the air, of water, and of land can only be put an end to by the fusion of town and country. And only this fusion will change the situation of the masses now languishing in the towns and enable their excrement to be used for the production of plants instead of being used for the production of disease. Though I must tell you that even polluted Los Angeles is a lot less polluted than most Soviet cities. It really is. But that's another story. Engels also adds, regarding the regulation of sex relationships after the impending effacement of capitalist production, after a new generation has grown up, they will not care a rap about what we today think they should do. They will then establish their own practice and their own public opinion conformable therewith. Nature will then come under the dominion and control of man, who for the first time will become the real conscious lord of nature. It will be the ascent of man from the kingdom of necessity to the kingdom of freedom, and man will become at the same time the lord over nature, his own master, and free. Finally, and then I'll open it up for questions in the remaining time, what does communism teach about the future in general? Marx says, communism as such is not the goal of human development. Only naturalism is capable of comprehending the act of world history. Engels states, the present state of natural science predicts a possible end even for the earth, and for its habitability, a fairly certain one, which therefore recognizes that for the history of mankind, too, there is not only an ascending, but also a descending branch. Lenin says, cognition is the eternal, endless approach of thought to the object. The reflection of nature in man's thought should not be conceived as being dead, as being abstract, without movement, without contradiction. It should be regarded as an eternal process of movement, the inception of contradictions and their solution. And Engels says, we then have once again returned to the mode of outlook of the great founders of Greek philosophy, the view that the whole of nature, from the smallest element to the greatest, from grains of sand to suns, from protista to man, has its existence in eternal coming into being and passing away, in ceaseless flux, in unresting motion and change. Millions of years may yet elapse, but inexorably the time will come when the declining warmth of the sun will no longer melt the ice thrusting forward from the poles. Gradually, even the last life will vanish, and the earth, an extinct, frozen globe, like the moon, will circle in deepest darkness about the equally extinct sun and at last fall into it. And then he adds, but don't worry. After the whole universe freezes up, a couple of billion years later, somehow, the universe will start heating up again. It will get hotter and hotter. It will begin to subdivide into clouds of gas. That will turn into something like our solar system. Part of it will become like our Earth. That gas there will turn into solid and liquid. And then with the sun baking down on it, there will be some sort of a slime at the bottom of the ocean, which will suddenly quiver and turn into the first primitive form of life, which over the next million years will evolve into a herd of apes, some of which will then stop their monkey business and climb down from the trees and turn into men, the first communists, until finally slavery is introduced and they go capitalist, and it goes through the cycle until finally there's a communist revolution to destroy capitalism, and that passes through the dictatorship of the proletariat, and that goes into socialism, and socialism ripens into communism, and then unfortunately the earth begins to cool down again and people leave the United States and Australia and go towards the equator to get a little warmth, and the globe freezes up again and falls into the sun, and it gets down to zero temperature, and then after a couple of billion years again, the whole thing slowly starts to heat up again. If you can believe that, you've got an awful lot of faith, but I find it awful depressing. I'm so pleased that one second after I die, even if it's right now, I'm going to heaven. And I'm going to stay there forever and forever and forever. And I'll tell you something. Every day with Jesus, not only when I get to heaven, but even right now, is sweeter than the day before. And nothing ever freezes up. Thank you for being patient. We got 5 minutes left for any questions and curveballs you want to throw. That's correct. That's right.
Therefore, my question. Why is it, or how do you justify the current international policy of glasnost?
Okay, well, if you read the writings of Lenin, you'll see he uses that word glasnost himself some 40 times before he died in the early 1920s. Glasnost really means put the acceleration toward communism on hold until you've consolidated your position. And further, you may need, in order to achieve that, to incorporate for a short time principles of capitalism into socialism, as Lenin did after war communism and under the new economic policy before Stalin again promoted ongoing socialism in the Soviet Union. So we've got that kind of a phase today. There are two big problems in the Soviet Union today. The first, of course, is its unproductive economic system. It can't produce, can't feed its people. And its top-heavy economy, which funnels something like 40% of the gross national product into the production of military hardware. Second, the Soviet Union consists of only 58% of Russians. The other 42% are non-Russians, and they don't like Russians. There's an awful lot of racial and cultural friction occurring in the Soviet Union. And that's why there are riots in Latvia and Lithuania and Estonia and White Russia and the Ukraine and you name it. And of course, down in Azerbaijan and Armenia. Well now, at this particular point in history, as we still move forward through socialism to future communism, as Gorbachev sees it, there are cracks in the wall that need to be repaired. And glasnost and perestroika, economic restructuring, are tools, methods to achieve that, so as to make accelerated progress later in socialism toward communism possible. That's the short answer. Yeah? That's right.
Isn't that not exactly what I said? It's just that.
Well, maybe. You see, I do not believe that it's inevitable that the world goes communist. As a matter of fact, and here probably all of you will disagree with me, I think it's inevitable the world's going to go Christian before the second coming. However, the world may go communist before after that it will go Christian if the non-communist world doesn't get its act together. If the so-called non-communist world remains ideologically weak, and the United States is pathetically weak ideologically as the leader of the non-communist world at the moment. Americans vaguely think communism is not something good, though some of them are beginning to talk about certain good elements in communism. I don't see anything good in communism. But the point is, America has got nothing really in its foreign policy to put in the place of communism. Because America, like most other Western countries, is ashamed of Christianity at the federal level. America persecutes Christianity in its own public schools. Now, when you've got that kind of a system, how on earth are you going to stand against a totalitarian system like communism, which, with all of its problems, is more monolithic? Except, let me say personally, I kind of doubt we're going to be fighting the communists, even ideologically, 50 or 100 years down the track. I think we're going to be fighting Islam, which at that time will be a lot more militant than communism is now, unless Christianity gets its act together. But I'm not talking about Islam now, though. I think I will be saying something about some radio show next week. So, yeah, I agree. It seems crazy for the Russians to argue that even by a zigzag approach, they are getting closer and closer to socialism. They may well be receding from it. But I'll tell you this, with Russians still more severely committed to their ideology than America is to whatever America is supposed to be believing in, having repudiated the views of its own founding fathers, I'd still put my money on the Soviet Union emerging as the victor unless America gets its act together real quick. In the short term, not in the long term, though. Yeah.
I was curious, do you see any relation to
Well, to the extent that communists are working round the clock to try and infiltrate South Africa, as they have been doing for the last 80 years, not with too much success until recently, yeah, sure. If the communists can take control of South Africa, they can help strangle the United States real quick. Because South Africa produces 75% of the world's gold, 90% of the platinum, most of the chrome and the vanadium, the molybdenum, all the things you need in Pittsburgh to be able to make a motor car, let alone a cannon. And let me tell you, when all of that stuff starts going to the Soviet Union because of stupid American pressure on South Africa, which is what's happening now, the Soviet Union will then buy the stuff from South Africa that South Africa really wants to sell to America, but America, for stupid reasons, doesn't want it anymore. So what America will then do, it'll buy South African metal from the Soviet Union at three times the price it would have paid if it had been paying South Africa direct. So the sad thing that's happening now is, under American and other Western countries' pressure, South Africa is ceasing to be anti-communist and is more and more making a deal with communists openly. And this probably will destroy the United States in the end, unless American policy can be reversed. One may want to ask, who is fabricating these American federal government policies against South Africa? You may find an awful lot of communists having eroded the State Department bringing this about. But at any rate, that's interesting. South Africa is a smallish country, only 750,000 square miles. That is about one-fifth the size of the United States, but it's crawling with valuable minerals. And whoever has those minerals will rule the world. Is it going to be the United States or the Soviet Union? You take your choice. Okay? Yeah. We're over time. This better be the last question. Okay. How are you handling the Russian and the Chinese issue? Isn't it crazy that Los Angeles has made it a crime for any company in Los Angeles to trade with South Africa, but not to trade with the Soviet Union and Red China? What kind of values are going on in this great America, this once great America? You tell me. If you believe in free enterprise, then you believe in the free market, in which case you trade with whatever country gives you the best deal for your money. Which means, surely, buy chrome from South Africa for $1 rather than buy the same South African chrome for $3 from the Soviet Union. It's an elementary principle of capitalism, I would have thought. But then who is saying that the United States is still a capitalist country under the federal government leadership? Pardon? Oh, that's really moral. That's really big. So we now get all moral when we're dealing with South Africa, whose problems we misunderstand and magnify, and we minimize the much bigger problems of the Soviet Union, and we ain't got no moral problems of trading with the Soviet Union. Let me tell you something. My parents are 81. They live in retirement in South Africa. And I'm going to visit them when I get through here. And you know what I've got to do to get to them from the United States these days to South Africa? I've got to catch a plane at my expense to England or to Germany, which costs me more money. But if my parents live in Red China, and I'm mighty upset about this, or in the Soviet Union, I can get on an Aeroflot aircraft in Los Angeles and fly to that communist country that's working for the overthrow of yours. If you can justify that in terms of Christian morality, you're a better person than I am. 3 years ago, I could fly from Houston to New York City to visit my parents in South Africa. Can't do that no more. Now I've got to fly to England or to Germany to do it. But the ways of getting there. And here's something even crazier. When I get through visiting my parents in South Africa, the only way I can get back to Australia is by flying out of South Africa north into a communist country, changing planes, and then flying on to Australia. Great world, huh? I get emotional about this, and let me tell you, I've got every right to.